Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America.
Though they don't have no other gods before me.
We are a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, and non-believers. We are shaped by every language and culture. Not only to create new jobs, but to lay a new foundation for growth. We will build the roads and bridges, the electric grids and digital lines that feed our commerce and bind us together.
Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God.
All right, you get the picture. Okay, he thought he was in the Ten Commandments. Welcome to the Savage Nation. You know, my fear of crowds goes back to my childhood. I remember as a little child being taken to parades by my mother, and I always feared parades because I looked up at the faces of the people as the parade went by, and I saw weirdness on the faces of people in the parade, in the crowd now. And what I was seeing as a child without understanding it were the faces of mass hysteria. Mass hysteria is the operational phrase for today, because Obama has induced mass hysteria with help from the media and Hollywood. Now, I don't want to make a comparison to Leni Riefenstahl and Adolf Hitler, because there's no comparison in terms of politics. However, in terms of manipulating the masses, there is a comparison. Only my fear is that even Hitler didn't have the TV media at that time, while Obama does. And I think that explains in part the Obama mania that we were witnessing. In 1841, there was a British journalist named Charles Mackey, and he wrote a book entitled The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. I want to read the title of that book again, 1841. The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And what he was writing about was a phenomenon of the 1630s in Holland called tulipomania. Tulipomania may have been the first recorded advent of a speculative bubble. And what happened was the Dutch were bidding on the prices of tulips higher and higher and higher until tulips, the bulbs, started to sell for as much as 10 times what the average worker in Holland made. Now, anyone who has such madness in them, based upon tulipomania in that case, can understand what I'm talking about here. Here we have a man trumpeted as the next Messiah. I heard a local talk show host in San Francisco as I was driving home from the studio last night, whose name rhymes with Queen, going on and on about how Barack Obama was as good as FDR and Lincoln and JFK combined. Now, I can't believe this because the man hasn't yet been president. I have no idea how they can compare an unknown man to FDR and Lincoln and JFK. I thought that a man was judged after he became president by his policies and by his performance, not before. But you see, tulipomania was based upon the madness of crowds and popular delusions. Obamamania is also based upon the madness of crowds and popular delusions. The gays have gone crazy for Obama. The blacks have gone crazy for Obama. The hard left has gone crazy for Obama, and that includes just about everybody in the midstream media. And I am telling you that we are on the verge of an unknown. It is a black box where we are going, and I don't mean that in a racial sense. I mean in the sense of a black box. Nobody knows what this man is going to do because nobody knows what he stands for unless you look at his voting record. And if you look at his voting record, you should be very frightened indeed. He is the most far-left senator in American history. And here, because of George Bush and John McCain, we have the most far-left president in American history thrust upon the American people. And I want to ask you today a few questions on the Savage Nation. I want to ask you a few questions. If you are a conservative, what do you most fear about the Obama administration? What do you fear most that he might do? And liberals, if you're listening to the Savage Nation, as I know many of you do, what really are your greatest hopes for the Obama administration? Because I don't see any hope here. I see hype. Where you see hope, I see hype. Where I see hype, you see hope. And believe me, I can look through it and see it the way it is. You just are a little slower than I am in seeing hype. For example, maybe I'll surprise you with this one. Today, Dick Cheney appeared in a wheelchair, which I thought was remarkable. They claim he pulled a muscle in his back. But what's amazing about it is that not only was he in a wheelchair, but he made himself look frail and crumpled up. For a second, a fleeting second, I thought Cheney was imitating FDR. I thought, here is a power-mad lunatic, Dr. Strangelove, for many of you, who was so obsessed with losing power, and losing power to an upstart liberal at that, that he took on the mantle of FDR to almost grab some of the spotlight. But it got crazier than that. Cheney was wheeled to his bulletproof limousine after all of the hoopla, and strangely enough, he spryly jumped into the limousine on his own. So help me God, that's what I saw. Cheney was wheeled, looking frail and crippled, blanket over his legs like FDR. But the minute he was wheeled up to the door of the limo, I don't know if anyone saw this but me. See, I see when the king has no clothes. He hopped spryly into the limousine. It was an act, in my opinion. Now, one of the reasons he did it was because he was his power was lost. Another reason was he wanted to create sympathy for himself so he's not called up on war crimes charges or such. That's what I believe Cheney was doing today. There were some other interesting phenomena today at the coronation. The most interesting to me was the vying for the spotlight by Dianne Feinstein. I don't know who else saw this, but there wasn't one person in the media who saw what I'm about to tell you went on. It was shortly after the speech. Bush was sort of leading a procession out of the speech area to wherever they go. And strangely enough, behind him was Dianne Feinstein, and trailing him was Barack Obama. When Barack Obama sped up by foot and with a thrust of his hips to the right, pushed Dianne Feinstein out of the way and took his rightly place behind George Bush. I think the woman is crazy. I think the madness of Dianne Feinstein, the power madness, you know, Lord Acton said power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Dianne Feinstein is absolutely corrupt, and she's absolutely insane. Now, earlier on, I don't know if you noticed this, when Obama was walking towards the podium, Dianne Feinstein was crawling right up his tailpipe. She was behind him, inches behind him, not feet behind him. So much so that a Marine guard had to intervene between Obama and Dianne Feinstein. What in the world do you think Dianne Feinstein was saying with her body language today? There were some other interesting statements today that were very worrisome, by the way. When Barack Obama said, "We are a nation of Christians and Muslims, pause, and Jews," I almost fell out of my chair. So far as I know it, this nation was founded on Judeo-Christian principles and values, not on Muslim Christian values. Now, what was he trying to say to us? I guess he was paying homage to his own 50% of his own faith. You notice today that the name Barack Hussein Obama came up only once, and it depended upon where you were. It depended upon where you were at the time. Is he Barack Hussein Obama, or is it Barack Obama? Is it BHO or BO? I'll be right back.
Savage.
For we know that our patchwork heritage is a strength, not a weakness. We are a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus.
Let's stop right there. It's not that we're not a nation of all of these faiths. It is the relative ranking of these faiths that is immediately to be noted. This was a nation not founded by Muslims and Christians. It was founded by Christians who built their faith upon the cornerstones of the Jewish faith, not upon the cornerstone of the Hindu faith or the Muslim faith or the Buddhist faith or upon the faithlessness of the atheists. It was built upon the faith of Christians. Obama knows this, so he's already sending a message. Now, over the next days, weeks, and months, until he tries to put talk radio out of business, which inevitably will come. It'll come in one form or another. It will not come directly from him, because I have studied the causes of revolution in the politics of Aristotle. I studied it in college, and I know how the tyrant works. The tyrant never looks like a tyrant. The tyrant never acts like the tyrant. The tyrant never does the things that he has other people do. No, it will not come from him. He will not do that at all. In fact, he will be the opposite of nearly everything which you describe as characteristic of tyrants. He will do the opposite. He will definitely do the opposite. He will have the mean of his party do the bidding for him. The little mean-spirited men and women of the Democrat Party will be very happy to breed mutual distrust in America and try to snuff out dissent. Now, it's interesting that Obama said that he wanted the foreign governments and this and that to respect dissent. Well, I certainly hope that he respects dissent in the United States of America. I kind of doubt it, because I believe that he has such power right now that this would-be tyrant has such a monopoly over the political system. He has such a monopoly over the political system that he will act as a sovereign, not as a president. So again, I ask you, if you are for or again, what do you fear the most about Obama, and what do you hope the most that Obama will do? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. America is no longer a Christian nation. Well, is that something to be celebrated? That's something we should celebrate? America is no longer a Christian nation? What is this nation? The HBO nation? Is this a nation of degenerates? A television nation? Hollywood nation? What is it? He says, I think that the right might worry a bit more about the dangers of sectarianism. He said, whatever we once were, we're no longer just a Christian nation. That was on the Christian Broadcast Network last year. He said, we're also a nation of non-believers. He wrote in an email to Christian Broadcasting Network senior national correspondent David Brody. Well, that's very interesting that he would make a point of that. So here we go. Let's take the callers on the Savage Nation. Chicago, Mark, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Michael. First, let me say I'm honored to be speaking with you. Now, I didn't vote for Obama, but I believe that he has to be a good president because the focus of history is upon him, you know. If he makes any mistakes, you know, that's it. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm a little bit nervous. But
What you're saying is he's going to be a great president because he has to be a great president?
I hope he will be a great president, but yeah, because...
Well, of course you hope he will be. We all hope he will be. But what is the likelihood of him being a great president when all of his voting was so far to the left that it was out of the ken of even the Democrat Party? The Democrat Party was rather moderate compared to this man's voting record.
You know,
think about it. Think about that. Think about what I'm saying to you. Think about what I am saying to you. We have three principles to which the ordinary policies of tyrants may be reduced. One, to breed mutual distrust among their subjects. Two, to make them incapable of action. And three, to break their spirits. That's according to Aristotle's Politics. To breed mutual distrust among the subjects. Two, to make them incapable of action. And three, to break their spirits. That's all. Just notice what I'm telling you. Just notice what I'm telling you and watch the bouncing ball. Don't listen to the empty skirts in the media. The empty skirts in the media are the reason we have this upstart, unknown nobody as president of the United States of America. They've already compared him to Lincoln, FDR, and JFK when the man had not even taken office. If that is not the equivalent of mass hysteria, if that's not an equivalent of herd mentality, and what's interesting to me is that it's coming from these liberals who think that they're free thinkers. Free thinkers espousing a herd mentality of mass hysteria. How could he be as great as all these presidents when he's not even taken the oath of office till today? Tulipomania, my friends. Tulipomania, my friends. Tulipomania, my friends. Tulipomania, my friends. The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, written in 1841. 1-800-449-8255. I mean, I'm not going to talk about fumbling on the presidential oath. We've all seen that. We're not going to talk about the others. You know, Kennedy suffers a seizure at an inaugural lunch. Or the Ku Klux Klan member, Robert Byrd, taking himself to a doctor. I mean, it's, you know, they're old sick men, and that's it. They got sick, they got excited, and they got sick. If Kennedy should meet his reward in the next months or years, and let's pray he does not, you know it'll be one whole week of hand-wrenching images of him, a complete distortion and delusion about who Kennedy really was. I, my friends, remember Kennedy's true legacy, but I'll save that for another time. Indiana Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I lived in Eastern Europe for a while, and that's my biggest fear, is we're headed to that exact kind of thing I was at when we lived there.
Well, what do you mean by Eastern Europe? You mean before the collapse of the wall?
No, even after the collapse. I lived there. We just moved back to the States 2.5 years ago.
My deepest fear is the Stasi. You're talking about, let's tell the people who the Stasi were. They were the Eastern European secret police, the Gestapo. The Soviet Gestapo were called the Stasi. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. My fear is Obama will set up a secret police force using the unemployed inner-city youth as his new police, his shock troops. Now, why do I say that? You're asking me my deepest fear? I just gave it to you. Because he said months before the election that he wanted to set up his own security apparatus in this country. Now, if that happens, you know what's coming in this country as much as I do. You want my deepest fear? You just got it.
Savage.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
We have to have a civilian national security force that's just as strong, just as powerful, just as well-funded as the U.S. military. That was Barack Hussein Obama months before the election in a little-known speech not played by the little pimps in the media, not played by the little prostitutes with lipstick. It makes me sick to think that they are the reasons this man. He is a very powerful forces. What did Obama mean by a civilian national security force? Will they be Obama's green shirts? Will they be an army of green shirts who come around to your house, knock on the door, and you have to let them in to see what your energy use is while they're really looking around for some inflammatory literature, perhaps, for a massive book burning? Will we enter Fahrenheit 451? Where are we going with this man? I fear mass hysteria. Now, you look backwards and you see what Bush did, and you realize that Bush and his cronies didn't know what they were doing. Every step he took and Paulson took to prop up the economy failed. Every time they stole our money from us, it failed. Despite all the sophistry and outdated lies that Bush and Paulson and the other cretins were telling us, they failed. The country now stands on the precipice of a total and absolute financial collapse. And you can thank George Bush's arrogance. You can thank the hubris of Paulson and the fools on Wall Street, the strutters and the serial incompetence of the government. And I'm asking you if you actually think that the next wave of government is going to be any different. To me, it's the same sophistry, the same hubris, the same outdated mentality from government types who do not know the first thing about a free market economy. And so I don't have much hope for Obama. I have extremely deep fears about Obama. And I'd like to ask you what your hopes or fears are. Harry in Fort Lauderdale is a hopeful man. Harry's calling the Savage Nation. Harry, what are your greatest hopes for Obama?
Well, Dr. Savage, I'm hoping that Obama will establish a friendship and alliance with Russia, because trying to police the world by ourselves is killing us, both financially and otherwise. Britain, our so-called closest ally, contributed only 5,000 troops in our to our efforts in Iraq. We sustained 4,000 fatalities. They suffered only 200. And now they've pulled out completely. What kind of an alliance is that? We don't need token commitments or moral support.
Well, we can go backwards and talk about the war. Bush destroyed his own administration and the whole Republican Party with this war that he would not end and that he would not win. He was like a cancer doctor in the sense of how he pursued this war. He would not kill and he would not cure. The fact of the matter is he's the worst doctor we've ever had. Now, you want an alliance with Russia. Right now, Russia has almost become our Cold War enemy again. You know that, Harry, don't you?
Well, no. I think Russia has demonstrated its opposition to radical Islam by its military campaigns in Chechnya and Afghanistan.
Whoa. You're talking about 10 years ago.
Let's
move the clock up now, Harry. Russian ships are within 100 miles of our shore. They're visiting Cuba right now. Why do you suppose that is?
When the Russians were fighting the Taliban, what did we do? We armed bin Laden. The Russians were doing our dirty work for us, yet we foolishly thwarted them.
Well, I agree with you. You have no argument with me. I remember the arming of the Taliban. They were our best friend at the time. But I'm asking you, why do you suppose the Russian Navy is visiting Cuba right now after visiting the tyrant of Venezuela?
Why? Because we've been meddling in their affairs.
You have no argument with me on that. Bush and that moron, Condoleezza Rice, by backing the nation of which, fill in the blank, in their attempts to steal land that was owned by Russia, provoked Russia into this position. That's my opinion.
Exactly.
We're talking about Georgia. When George Bush and that moron college professor, Condoleezza Rice, backed that would-be little petty dictator of Georgia in his attempts to take over disputed land that was owned by Russia, Russia was forced to act in its own self-interest. That's how I see it.
Did you know that FDR in his memoirs stated that there would never be peace in the world without cooperation between Russia and the United States?
Harry, that was then, this is now. China is a bigger issue than the Soviet Union.
Well, but every time Putin extends his hand of friendship, we push it away. Russia can be a crucial bulwark.
Yes, particularly since Russia has moved somewhat towards the free market system. And just as Russia moved toward the free market system, we've moved toward the socialist system. Isn't that interesting, Harry? That as far as they've moved towards free markets, we've moved in the other direction towards socialism. Isn't that quite interesting, Harry?
Well, that is interesting, and a friend of mine predicted that 20 years ago.
You know who predicted that 60 years ago? Aldous Huxley. In the 50s, Aldous Huxley wrote that as the Soviet Union becomes more and more like the United States of America, the United States of America will become more like the ex-Soviet Union. He said that in the 1950s. He saw it was coming, Harry. And my deepest fear is that Obama represents a move into a Soviet era in the United States of America.
Yeah,
You don't have that fear of Obama, though.
No, I don't. If it was up to me, I would apologize to Russia for what we did to them.
Well, let's forget Russia for a minute. You're an Obama supporter. You're an intelligent man. You know history. Doesn't it worry you that Obama gave a speech calling for a civilian national security force? What does that mean, Harry?
Yes, that does worry me. I don't know what he means by that. I don't know what he has in mind. but I would keep on top of that
Harry, you're a wonderful, wonderful resource for the Savage Nation out of Fort Lauderdale, and I appreciate it. I love the old-timers who know their history just as much as I love the newcomers to the Savage Nation who have the passion, but perhaps not the history, but they know what's up somehow intuitively. And my job is to articulate the what's up in more words than one. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. You're free to call it on any topic, really. The number one topic is, of course, the inauguration and what the Obama administration means for you in terms of hope or fear. And that's what I'm asking you. We had one man calling on his hopes for the Obama administration. Now I'd like to hear from some of you who have fears about Obama. What exactly are they? Let's go to New York City, WOR land. Noah, what are your deepest fears for the Obama administration?
My fear is not Obama-specific. It's any new president. I have a unique perspective. I lived in Israel for 18 years and spent 3 years in the Israeli Air Force. I'm a U.S. citizen, and I'm back. I moved there because my father was old, and I had to help him. I'm back. I'm happy to be back in the States. And my fear is most U.S. presidents, U.S. politicians, apply Western life-loving principles to Muslim fanatic terrorists. And it doesn't work.
And no, it never has worked. They were trying, you know, there's an article I linked up on michaelsavage.com that answers the, that actually speaks directly to your point. We read the other day that an Al-Qaeda cell in Algeria, 40 men died from the plague by Black Death. And it wasn't from rats, as first reported, running around in the caves. They were developing biological weapons. Noah, what kind of people spend their every waking minute thinking how to kill and how to harm, how to blow up buildings and bridges, how to disseminate the bubonic plague? What kind of mindset is that, Noah?
Fanatics that require death immediately.
Yes, absolutely. There's no reasoning with them. And this is the problem, Noah. Liberals think that if you're nice to tyrants, they will become nice to you. They don't understand that if you extend the hand of friendship, they'll cut it off. Now, I have a great example of this. In fact, I went to dinner the other day with a couple of friends. One of the people, the woman of the family, is a liberal. I try to explain to her the issue of Chamberlain. Chamberlain of England in 1938-39 going to Hitler. Are you there, Noah?
I said it goes back as far as Chamberlain begging Hitler for peace.
That's right. Chamberlain comes back from Munich and he says, I've just come back from meeting President Hitler, and Hitler assures me that we will have peace in our time. I have in my hand a piece of paper that shows that Anglo-German relations have never been stronger. And you hear the cheers, Noah. And, of course, Hitler was faking him out and continued on his course of taking one country after another. To me, Obama is the Chamberlain of our time. He himself is not an evil man, but he is surrounded by naive college professors and some extremely evil demagogues. Noah, that's the problem, in my opinion.
This is what my fear is. I voted for Obama. I would have preferred Hillary Clinton, but this is what my choice. I couldn't vote for Palin between a rock and a hard place, but I couldn't walk away from the vote at all. So I had to make a decision.
So you yourself voted for this left-wing naive. Why would you vote for a naive left-winger?
My Vice President Biden, if God forbid something happened, or Vice President Palin.
Well, I agree with you. In fact, I was roundly slammed when Palin appeared on the scene. Many people didn't understand. I saw through that mob of her family. I took one look at them, and I said they looked like the perps on Cops. And I was slammed by a lot of listeners who were taken in by the mass hysteria, just as many Obama maniacs are taken in by the mass hysteria today. She is absolutely not equipped to be a national figure. This woman, I don't want to spend much time on, but when I realized she was a hairbreadth away, I really worried. However, on the other hand, I don't want to relive past history. Noah, thank you for the call. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Before we go, for those of you who don't know who we're referring to, we're going to play a piece that's very telling, and that is a good liberal named Neville Chamberlain, who in England in 1939, on the eve of World War II, thought that he, like Obama, could make peace with a mad tyrant named Adolf Hitler. Listen to the speech.
This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine. We, the German Führer and Chancellor, and the British Prime Minister, have had a further meeting today and are agreed in recognizing that the question of Anglo-German relations is of the first importance for the two countries and for Europe. We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
Now, you heard the mass hysteria of the British socialists, 1939, of never to go to war again. And shortly thereafter, Hitler invaded yet another country. And shortly thereafter, the young English boys were killing the young German boys. I'll be right back.
Savage.
To the Muslim world, we seek a new way forward based on mutual interest and mutual respect. To those leaders around the globe who seek to sow conflict or blame their society's ills on the West, know that your people will judge you on what you can build, not what you destroy. To those...
All right, very good. I only wish to God that he was talking to rational, sane people. We know our enemy was trying to create bubonic plague to disseminate in American or European cities. I kind of doubt that they'll be lifted up by his rhetoric. What about Bush's legacy? What was Bush's legacy? Now, there was a fabulous editorial today in Newsmax, and their headline is "Conservatives Were Betrayed by Bush." That's his main legacy. Well, that we all know. But the editorial itself was really quite excellent, and I can't read you the whole thing on the show right now. But we know what Bush did. And yet, here we have Bush in Texas right now giving a welcome home speech that's nauseating for a number of reasons. One, because Bush has the lowest ratings in history, and he's acting as though he did a great job. Here's a man who destroyed not only the Republican Party, but the conservative movement. Here is a man who pushed Obama, or actually foisted Obama upon us, because of his foolish acts and his unwillingness to end the war and move on, also because he destroyed the economy by permitting the gangsters of Wall Street to run without any kind of restrictions whatsoever. So the fact of the matter is nobody can remember a time like this when a president has done so much harm not only to his own party but to the country itself. And as a result, we have Obama. I want to remind you, we just had a caller on the show, a man who said he was an American citizen. He went to Israel, was in the Air Force. He's come back. He's glad to be back. He was normally a man who would have voted for conservatives, but he voted for Obama. Now, how many other millions of people in America did not vote for McCain Palin for the various reasons I've discussed ad nauseum over the last months? I don't have to reiterate why McCain Palin was the wrong choice. But I will tell you that had the Republican Party truly wanted to win, they would have run Romney and a conservative or moderately conservative woman such as Hutchinson from Texas. They would have beaten Obama by 20 points, in my estimation. They chose to have a Democrat win. Did they want Obama? I don't know. They probably thought Hillary would be the president. They know that they threw a hot potato at the Democrats, a broken economy, two wars without end, etc., and that they were virtually unfixable problems, and that after 2 years, the Democrat will have to take responsibility for the broken economy and the wars that won't end, and then it will be time for the Republicans to promise their malarkey and come back and win, and they're probably saving Romney for that. That's been my opinion for months now. Nevertheless, here is what we have. Through a series of errors, through a series of calculations and miscalculations, we have the most left-wing politician in American history. Now, I mean on a national stage. We've had left-wingers before, not as far to the left as Obama, so far as I know, but never before have any of them gotten this far. So here we are. And I'm asking you, what are your hopes and what are your fears? Okay? Chicago, Keith, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, my greatest hope is that now that America has elected a black president, we can do away with affirmative action, and my eight children will be able to compete on a level playing field. My greatest fear...
Yeah, well, let's pause on right there. I assume that you're of Caucasian descent?
Yes.
Right, and right now you know there's no level playing field.
I could tell you from personal experience.
Yes, in other words, if your daughter gets a straight A average and you get a person of color with a straight B average, who gets the scholarship?
Yeah, they could probably even get a C or a D minus.
Well, there you go. Well, that's to make up for past injustices.
That's what we've been told.
Of course, you had nothing to do with them. You know, there's an interesting poll on my website from CNNMichaelSavage.com. It says more than two-thirds of African-Americans believe M.L. King Jr.'s vision for race relations has been fulfilled. What's interesting is that the white liberals are the ones who won't let it go. You know that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
So it's the white liberal who continues to attack white people in this country more than it is black people themselves. And, Keith, that's the problem right there. I don't think he's going to drop affirmative action. I think he's going to make it even worse.
No, it's my hope, not my expectation.
Oh, okay. Well, that's well put. Now, what's your worst fear?
My worst fear is that the leftists never have played fairly. They always believe in the one man, one vote, one time. And I think if Obama legalizes all of the illegal aliens and all of their relatives become citizens, and then we have ACORN and their activities, and we have no chance to have the media comment on any illicit activities, and we have...
Right. It'll soon be illegal to comment on gay sex in anything but a positive manner if Obama has his way. I can give you the 10 things Obama's going to do in the order in which he will do them, in my opinion, and I'll do so in short order, but not right now on the Savage Nation. But I did predict about a month ago that the first thing, or amongst the first things he would do, would be to pay back the billionaires of Hollywood who happen to be gay by announcing the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And he's already said he will do that. The next step will be hate crimes legislation to protect homosexuals.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
For as much as government can do and must do, it is ultimately the faith and determination of the American people upon which this nation relies. It is the kindness to take in a stranger when the levees break. The selflessness of workers who would rather cut their hours than see a friend lose their job, which sees us through our darkest hours. It is the firefighter's courage to storm a stairway filled with smoke, but also a parent's willingness to nurture a child that finally decides our fate.
This might be the time to get into the prodigious menu for this lunch. This is, to me, one of the really interesting things about this whole day. They're going to have a lunch here. This is being put on by the joint...
That's the son of Meatloaf from Fox News, Chris Walachensky, talking about the food at the inaugural luncheon, because there's not much else to talk about. The reason I opened the way I did is because, frankly, despite all of the hype, there was not much to hope for. In Obama's speech-making, there was not one line I can think of that will be remembered. I mean, maybe you disagree with me, but I didn't hear anything of we have only fear itself, or ask not what your country can do for you, what you can do for your country. Obama gave a speech that could have been written, you know, for a college induction. It sounded like the kind of speech you would expect at a college graduation from a somewhat popular professor, rather than a man who was supposed to lead a train wreck called the United States of America. And that's why, again, I say to you, I'm not enamored of the hype. To me, it's mass hysteria on the order of, I'm sorry, Obama is not Lincoln. Obama is not JFK. Obama is not FDR. Obama is a blank canvas. We don't know who he is, except his voting record indicates that we have an idea where he'll take the country, and that's all the way to the far left. But he's done nothing. And yet we have people in radio and on television comparing him to Lincoln and FDR, even though he has done nothing. That's why I say to you, what is your deepest fear about the Obama administration? Or on the other side of the aisle, what is your greatest hope for the Obama administration? You can call me here on the Savage Nation at 1-800-449-8255. I want to guide you, though, to what more of you can expect, what the kind of story you can expect more of now that Obama's president. There's an article I linked up on michaelsavage.com from the Oregon News. It says the mayor of Portland is going to respond to reports of sexual relationship with a teen boy. Portland Mayor Sam Adams is expected to make his first public statement today in response to news reports that he had a sexual relationship with an 18-year-old boy in the summer of 05. Now, you have to read the article halfway down to see the word boy. And on the eve of his campaign for the city's highest office, lied about it and urged the young man to lie as well. Young man. So here it is. This is the mayor of Portland, Oregon, ground zero for progressive zaniness. And this now is these are the mores that you will see in the Obama administration, if not certainly from himself, then from the folks closest to him. Make no mistake about it. We have entered a very, very, very brave new world. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Fears and hopes are the topics. San Francisco, KNEW country. Irene, welcome to the Savage Nation. What is your deepest fear for Obama?
Yes, my worst fear will be Obama will be soft in our nation's security. And I agree with you that he might impose civilian security. Where is he going?
Well, he's already reached out to our enemies saying he wants to be their friend. That sounds good on paper. That is something that pacifists have always believed, that you can make friends with evil people. But history would dictate to the opposite, wouldn't it, Irene?
Yes, exactly. I'm afraid I totally agree with you with what most of you were saying, 98%. And I tried to listen.
Well, remember, 47% of Americans did not vote for Obama. And approximately 10 or 15% of those who did would gladly have voted for a real conservative had there been one. So Obama does not have the mandate that he thinks he has, and it's going to be interesting to see how far he tries to push the country to the left and how fast he tries to do so. Thank you for the call, Irene. 1-800-449-8255. Let us go to New York City, WOR. George, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes. Mike, the election is over. Obama's our president. Let's give this guy a chair. Let's see what he could do within a year or year two. After that, if he doesn't...
Well, we're giving him a chance, but that's not what we're talking about. I asked you, what's your greatest hope, then, if you're on his side? What is your greatest hope? What do you want him to do the most? What do you hope he'll do the most?
I hope he's a good president and he pulls us out of this recession.
All right, so your number one concern is the economy. How do you expect him to pull us out of the recession? What do you think he's going to do that others have not been able to do, George? What do you think he's going to do to pull us out of the recession?
I haven't the slightest idea, Mike. I haven't.
No, well, neither does he. Neither does he, because if he knew how to do it, the Democrats would have done it already. So their concept of getting us out of the Depression is the same thing that George Bush was doing, which is spending more of the taxpayers' money on the bankers. George, that's not going to work, George.
Give him a chance, Mike. Give him a chance. He was elected, what, first day in office today.
George, don't get overly excited. It's not good for your health, particularly a man of your age. We're asking specific questions, and apparently you don't have a specific answer. You're saying you hope he pulls us out of the depression. I'm telling you that there's no way to pull us out of a depression by spending out of it. Bush has tried that for 3 months now. Has the recession gotten better or worse, George?
Worse.
So let's use logic, George. If Bush has spent almost $1 trillion and it's gotten us even in a worse straits, Obama didn't say he's going to stop this. He said he wants to spend even more, over $1 trillion. How is that going to help us, George?
Everybody talks, they say, but they don't end up doing what they say to do.
Now that's another story. All right, well, okay, you mean maybe he's going to do something other than spend $1 trillion, like tax anybody who's productive in America and give it to the deadbeats. Thanks for the call. This is the Savage Nation. Indiana, Lloyd, you're next up. Hope or fear? Which side of the aisle are you on, Lloyd?
Well, I'm hope. I hope that a leopard can change its spots, because the thing that scares me, just like the whole day today was lived in the past at the inauguration, talking about things that went on 60, 80, 400 years ago, my fear is that Obama's associations from the past will bleed right over into the future, and that's a devastating, terrible situation for America.
You mean, well, let's get specific here, Lloyd. You're a very keen social observer. What did you observe today that worried you?
He made it a racial thing. He made it a situation where nothing was really clear. He never said a single word, and the speakers he had all talked about the past, and I worry about his acquaintances, the Reverend Wright, Bill Ayers, his appointment for the Attorney General, his appointment for Secretary of State, if she gets accepted. I fear his acquaintances, and I fear that he cannot change his stripes.
Well, the reverend who gave the invocation today was extremely racist, if you listen to it. He talked about he hopes the white will do right again. Did you hear that line, Lloyd?
Yes, sir, I did. But Fox News made him sound like he was a saint.
He was no saint. He was a race monger, a race hater, and frankly, a divider. I was shocked to hear that he was bringing up when the red man can do this and when the black man can come from the back of the line. And now he hopes the white will do right. That was one of the most racially inciting speeches I've ever heard in my life. How's that for an opener?
That is my fear, that a leopard cannot change its spots.
Well, wait a minute. You say a leopard can't change its spots, but you also commented on Fox News covering up. So you're also saying a leprechaun can't change its spots either.
Well, I didn't hear him talk today.
I'm joking. But Reverend Joseph Lowry certainly was a racist. By any definition, and that's what you're talking about. Lloyd, I want to send you a copy of Psychological Nudity, my great Savage Radio storybook, and I want to play now for you clip 28, Reverend Joseph Lowry, today. Listen to this carefully, and you will hear racism.
We ask you to help us work for that day when black will not be asked to get back, when brown can stick around, when yellow will be mellow, when the red man can get ahead, man, and when white will...
F. White, who's become president, you're still screaming like you're oppressed. You know what? Take it and shove it. I'm sick of these race hustlers. I'll be right back before I say something I regret.
Savage.
Now, we're talking about the Reverend Joseph Lowry today at President Obama's inauguration. He gave what is clearly a racist speech. And I played it before the break, and I understand it's been edited and cut by sneaks in various radio stations around America in order to make Obama look like what he is. And now, I don't know who's doing this, but we're going to get to the bottom of this. But what I'm going to do right now is play the Reverend Joseph Lowry's inaugural statement again today, where he attacks white people. Listen to clip 28.
We ask you to help us work for that day when black will not be asked to get back, when brown can stick around, when yellow will be mellow. When the red man can get ahead, man. And when white will embrace what is right. That all those who do justice.
You know, this old racist never. Shut him off. This old black racist is a disgrace. And if this epitomizes what Obama stands for, we're in real trouble. How dare he say when white will embrace what is right when he was elected because of white people, not because of black people. Moreover, what would have happened if a white man gave a speech and said when yellow will be mellow? Tell me what the Asian American community would have said about that instead of laughing like he's some kindly old man. This is not a kindly old man. This is a throwback to another age in America. This is the Savage Nation. And I am sick of the media covering up the inherent racism that we heard today. Do you understand this? Do you get it? Now I'm asking you again, whether you're on the fear or hope side, what do you fear and what do you hope? Portland, Oregon, Randy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, thanks for taking my call today. I actually hope that I'm wrong to fear Obama. My fear right now is that we are heading into another civil war.
Hold on. What do you mean by heading into another civil war? You mean because of the kind of racially charged, in fact, racist statements that were read today by Reverend Joseph Lowry, that he hopes when white will embrace right? Now, if that's not an incendiary racist statement, I'd like to know what is.
Yeah, exactly. And I've been thinking.
What does he mean by when black will ask not to give back, when brown can stick around? What the heck is this old bum talking about?
I think that he's probably talking about the years of oppression that the blacks had suffered, that we're...
what does he mean by when yellow will be mellow? What do you think that is? Is that not a racist statement to Asian people?
It is. When I heard him, I thought I was listening to Jeremy Wright.
Thank you. Thank you. They're all cut from the same cloth, apparently, in the Obama constellation of reverends. And so we are in trouble if this is what Obama wants to say through his old preacher, the Reverend Joseph Lowry. I was insulted by this.
Yes. I think that today I'm calling you because I have the freedom to do so. I don't believe I'm going to have that freedom much longer. When I was in a grocery store with my children, they said something negative about Obama, and I actually looked around to see who was listening because I really fear that at some point either his Gestapos or you were talking about his national security, you know,
yes.
I mean, what's it all about?
I don't know. What does Obama mean by a civilian national security force equal to, if not greater than, the U.S. military? Let's play that one again, Randy. Listen to this. This was Obama before the election.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
Now, what does Obama mean by a civilian national security force that's just as strong, just as powerful, and just as well-funded as the U.S. military? Is that going to be sort of Obama's green shirts? What exactly did he mean? Was that just a throwaway line? He doesn't really mean it. Or is that what he really wants to do with the unemployed inner city youth, is give them a green uniform and sort of deputize them? Well, we don't know, but I guarantee you that the same people who just laughed upon the kindly words of Reverend Joseph Lowry when he insulted white people and Asian people will say, hey, that's good that we have a civilian national security force walking around America. You know that they'll go for it. You know that the mass hysteria will carry them to that level of insanity. You understand this. You understand it as well as I do. San Francisco, KNEW, hope or fear? You're on the Savage Nation. Which one are you, the hope or the fear?
I'll give you the hope first. I am hopeful that the weight and gravity of the Oval Office can help to move him to the center. I'm concerned that he's starting off far left, but that's the only hope I have. In terms of fear, there's a lot of fear. I fear for security of our borders. I fear for racism from the government. And I fear of Robin Hood economics.
My friend, I agree with everything you say. I agree with every word you just said. I am not in the hope category. I'm in the fear category for one reason. I know history. I also do not join mass hysteria very readily. I abhor mass hysteria. I do not believe in tulipomania any more than I believe in Obamamania. And when I see people saying he's greater than FDR, Lincoln, and JFK put together, when he hadn't even taken the oath of office, we have a lot to fear,
Savage.
Believe me.
We ask you to help us work for that day when black will not be asked to get back, when brown can stick around, when yellow will be mellow, when the red man can get ahead, man, and when white will embrace what is right.
Now, if this was, hold on, if this was a parody of an old civil rights era, somewhat racist black reverend from the 60s, it would be laughable. But it is not such a parody. This is Reverend Joseph Lowery at President Obama's inauguration saying what are incendiary things today. Now, he certainly insulted Asian people by saying when yellow will be mellow. He certainly insulted white people by saying when white will embrace what is right, when it was white people who are still the majority in this country who just elected a man who is 50% black. And for him to say when black will ask not to give back, what in the heck does this old man mean? When black will ask not, will be asked not to give back? You mean they won't have to pay taxes? This is not laughable. I'm afraid that Obama has a reverend problem. And I'm afraid that Obama's reverend problem has not gone away. I'm here to tell you that Obama's reverend problem has just gotten worse. Now, you're not going to hear this discussed on Fix News Network because you know why they moved, how far they moved to the left and how fast they've done so. We in talk radio, those of us who still take our job seriously, we have one job in this business, and that is to be the watchdog of government, not the lapdog of government. But if you're in television, cable news, you live on governmental guests. I don't. I'm blessed that governmental guests would not, nor do I wish for them to come on this show. And so I have to fall back upon my own observations and opinions. Las Vegas, Jody, what is your deepest hope for Barack Obama?
Well, my deepest fear is this the civil service that he's fixing to tear it up. He's going to require everyone 18 to 25 to do mandatory service. And it's exactly what you said. It's going to be the youth brigade of the 30s and 40s.
Well, when he says a civilian national security force more powerful than the military, better funded, what does he mean? Green shirts that'll come around threatening people if they use too much energy?
That's what I'm basically figuring it's going to happen. I mean, with everyone's carbon footprint stomping down the door, it's going to be
In other words, in the name of the name of global warming, we have the right to seize your children.
It'll probably come to that. I mean, just like communist China doing the one child.
All right, so that's your worst fear. That's a totally paranoid worst fear scenario. Let's put it in context. You do know that already the stock market took its worst dive in Dow Jones industrial history for an inauguration day. That means Wall Street does not like Barack Obama's policies in advance.
Yes.
Thank you for the call. So that for those of you who think he's a miracle worker, he's just a man and a left winger at that. It's the worst single day inauguration day drop in Dow Jones industrial history, the day your dream boy became president. He is a man, after all. He's not a miracle worker. But to you out there, those of you whose names rhyme with Queen, you think that this man is a miracle worker. U.S. stocks sank, sending the Dow Jones Industrial Average to its worst inauguration day decline, as speculation that banks must raise more capital sent financial shares to an almost 14-year low. State Street Corp, the largest money manager for institutions, tumbled 59% today after unrealized bond losses almost doubled. Wells Fargo & Company and Bank of America Corp slumped more than 23%. On an analyst prediction that they'll need to take steps to shore up their balance sheets. Now, this is after these companies were given billions of dollars the other day. The Dow's 4% slide today was the most on an inauguration day in the measure's 112-year history, according to data compiled by Bloomberg and the Stock Trader Almanac. Did you hear what I just said to you? despite all of this grandiose hoopla that's going on in Washington, do you understand what's actually going on in the financial capitals? Do you understand that the people themselves are very nervous that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing? Do you understand that the turmoil that we're living through is not going to be solved by rhetoric alone? Do you understand that the $1 trillion of losses at financial institutions that have prompted a sell-off in global stock markets will not be solved because of hope? No matter how much hope there is, it's not going to save the day. Do you understand that you cannot spend your way out of a recession/depression? Do you understand any of these things? I hope so. So that's my hope. My hope is that you have the hope to understand that a miracle has not been sworn in. Just another man. But I'll go to you, the callers, at 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, Binghamton, New York. Christian, your hope or your fears, what are they?
Savage, my hope is, well, I have, it's a double-edged sword, because my hope is that Barack Obama will take a very strong stance on terrorism, because these are people who cannot be reasoned with. They are absolutely not. But my fear is that because we have become such a, shall we put it nicely, a wussy country, that he will not be able to do that. And that is my...
But you said because we've become a what country?
We've become a wussy country. I mean, perhaps...
Well, yeah, we've become a pacifist socialist nation. That's what we've become in straight political terminology. Pacifist slash socialist nation under George Bush. And Obama's only going to take it to the next several levels.
I mean, you are arguing with people who cannot be argued with. These are people who think that they're going to heaven for 72 virgins. I mean, this is not a situation. As much as I do not think Putin is exactly a nice person, I will say when he blew up the school, he made a point.
Well, he didn't blow up the school. He did not kill everybody in the Beslan school. When the Muslims were holding Russian parents and their children hostage and threatened to blow everyone up, Putin sent in the Spetsnaz, which is perhaps the greatest special forces in the world, and they take no prisoners. They injected poison gas into the auditorium, and then they went into the auditorium and shot the terrorists in the head. They did not bring them back for a trial, including the women in garb, in full Muslim garb. They did not bring them back for a trial. They shot them in the head as they were dozing off from the poison gas. Thank you for the call. I know we'd all like Putin to run America. Actually, the more people I speak with, the more they say we wish we had a strong man like Putin. He would have gotten elected. Unfortunately, they ran an old weakling like John McCain, and that's why we have Obama. We don't have a strong man on the horizon. Now, that's the absolute truth. There is no conservative base in America. Let us say there is a conservative base. There's no conservative candidates. None. Zero. They're not in politics. If they did exist in politics, Bush drove them out of politics. He used all the power and all the money of the Republican Party to purge the party of conservatives. He destroyed first the conservative movement and then the Republican Party itself in order to make the world safe for the New World Order. That's my opinion. George Bush did this on purpose, not by accident. But that's, you know, this is a topic for another time. It's a topic for a historian who understands the grand sweep of history and doesn't think that I'm just engaging in inflammatory rhetoric here. I believe George Bush did this by design, but that's a separate story. San Diego, Ray, you're on the Savage Nation. Your topic, please.
How you doing, Michael? Hey, I just a couple things, really. You know, my hope is that somehow he can pull off everything that he's planning to do. I'm not sure that he's going to be able to do that. I didn't vote
for him. You hope Obama can pull off everything he's planning to do. Does that include a civilian national security force stronger than our military?
No, my biggest hope really right now is for the economy. You know, obviously, I work for a pretty large construction company in San Diego. It's pretty tough out here, you know, with all that's going on with the economy. And obviously, there's a lot of pie-in-the-sky dreams that he has. I really hope that they're able to pull it off. My fear is that he's...
Why do you suppose the stock market took its largest drop in inaugural day history?
I think they're worried. I think they're fearful of, you know, again, a lot of the promises, you know, but that's politics as usual. A lot of promises and not a lot of delivery.
Well, okay, I understand you voted for Obama, but do you actually think this man has some miracle that he's going to pull out of a hat?
I did not vote for Obama. No, my vote would never have gone to him. Are you still over there, Michael? I'm sorry.
Yeah. So you're saying you're hoping he can do what he says he's going to do, even though you didn't vote for him. I get it. Well, I hope he doesn't do what he says he's going to do, because he said he wants to create a civilian national security force while he was campaigning. Should we say that that was an anomaly, a mistake, an accident? He didn't really mean it. He was doing it to placate what? The Bill Ayers faction of the Democrat Party? What does he mean by a civilian national security force? I'm bringing it up over and over and over again in order to alert you to the fact that he may do things that you can't believe, and you better watch out when it happens, because the worshipers, the Tulipomania people out there, will say, hey, that's great. I love the Obama green shirts. They're going to really make certain that we solve global warming in our time. Kansas City, Roger on the Savage Nation.
Yeah. I feel the fear far outweighs the hope, so I'll start with the fear. My main concern would be that would actually send this country into a civil war would be a gun grab. Number two would be an amnesty, and number three would be a reparations.
Oh, my God. Reparations for whom? You don't mean for reparations given to African Americans, do you?
That is correct.
Oh, well, I've already given my reparations through job loss. Jobs that I should have gotten that were given to less qualified minorities, taxation to support people, the extraordinary costs involved in a welfare state, the extraordinary number of police actions that are required. I think I've paid in advance, don't you?
I agree with you, Michael.
I'm sick and tired of the rhetoric, and I'm tired of the double talk. And frankly, I'm not going to change my rhetoric, because I don't work for Fox News. I work for myself. North Carolina, Catherine, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
I wanted to comment about the preacher.
You mean Reverend Joseph Lowry saying he hopes white will embrace what is right?
Now, me, I'm an African-American female. I did find that very offensive, but you can't take what everybody says about Obama to heart. I mean, everybody's too busy worried about, I mean, the man hasn't even been in office for 24 hours, and everybody already has something negative to say.
Slow down. If George Bush or a white man were inducted into the presidency instead of Obama, and he got a cracker preacher up there who said something in reverse, that I hope, that I ask you to help us work for that day when white will be asked not to give back, what do you think that would signal?
You know what? This is what I'm saying. That's the biggest problem. Don't worry about what everybody else has said.
He chose Reverend Joseph Lowry to give the invocation, didn't he?
And he messed it up. Oh, well, life goes on. You can't dabble on what somebody has said. Just let him go ahead. Let's let him get in office, and let's let him show us what he's going to do.
About a civilian national security force? Does that worry you?
If Obama wants to give me an AK-47 and I'll protect the country, I'll protect the country.
What do you mean you'll protect the country? What does that mean? You'll go and shoot someone?
Hey, if it comes down to it, and if they're a terrorist, yeah, I'll do it. But everybody is so busy. I mean, and the biggest thing about...
Wait a minute. Obama said before the election that he wants to create a civilian national security force more powerful than the U.S. military. What do you suspect he means by that?
I don't know, but let's see. Let's give the man a chance.
So what if he took you and 3 million other people and gave them guns and said you are now the civilian national security force? What do you suppose your job would be?
To protect the civilians, protect my people. I was born here. What do you expect?
What do you mean, protect your people or the United States of America?
Protect my people. When I say my people, I don't mean just black people. I mean the United States. I'm not racist. This is everybody's biggest problem. It's because he's black.
Well, he isn't black. He's 50% white. I don't know why we keep hearing he's black. I mean, he's 50% white. Whatever happened to his mother? How come he didn't mention his mother today?
Okay, this is what I'm saying. Back in when slavery was there, they said that if you had 1% of black blood, that you were considered black. So why is everybody backpedaling on that now? Because it was set up that way. So everybody's like, okay, well, he's black when he was running.
So in other words, he's identifying with slavery times by saying because he's 50% black, he's 100% black by the definition of white slave masters?
He can be white. He can be whatever he wants to be or whatever he
He is not black and he's not white. He's multiracial, by the way, Catherine. I mean, let's be clear about it. He's a multiracial man. His race is not the issue. And yet today I heard an awful lot about race, Catherine. He had a preacher who espoused racist sentiments. I heard a speech from Obama that had race in it. Here's a man who says he wants to unite us when he started to divide us. It's not me saying it. It's me noticing these things, Catherine.
He hasn't even been in office. Everybody's like, well, he said this or he said that. Okay, well, you know what?
What do you mean everybody like he said this and like he said that? What do you expect us to do? Sit here and hail him like the new Caesar?
I'm not saying sit here and hail him like the new Caesar. I'm saying to at least give the man a chance. He hasn't even did anything yet, and everybody's on his back. Give him a chance.
What do you mean everybody's on his back? Where have you been for the last 8 years? What about George Bush? They were not on his back, commenting on his every comma?
George Bush is the reason why we're in debt now. We have hit rock bottom as a country.
No. Don't go to a new point. The job of the media is to sit here and notice what our leaders say and what they do. That is both what they say and what they do. Because often deeds follow the words. So when they say things, we pay careful attention to them. And we criticize them if we disagree with them in an attempt to keep them on the right track, Catherine. That is how a democracy works. Thank you for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
For we know that our patchwork heritage is a strength, not a weakness. We are a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus.
Let's stop right there. I think you should pay close attention to what Obama just said. We're a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews, and et cetera. That's a big leap. That's a gigantic historic leap. Because although he may be factually correct, the nation was not founded by Muslims and Christians. The nation was founded by Christians running from the oppression of other Christians. And their Christianity, their fundamentalist Christianity of the founding people, the pilgrims, if you want to call it that, was built clearly upon the work of the Jewish people in the Old Testament, the ancients, not upon Bernie Madoff, to be very clear. And so we've heard for years now that we are a nation built upon the faith of the Judeo-Christian faith. Well, I guess according to Obama, it's built upon the Christian-Muslim faith. Well, that's new. That's a kind of a new approach to things. That's interesting unto itself. Congratulations, Mr. President. I guess the times, they are a-changing. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What's your greatest fear? What's your greatest hope? This is the place to express that. Michelle in Indianapolis, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, you're my only hope right now. And my greatest fear is that we'll have another terrorist attack. But I have many other fears that are related to Barack Obama's reference.
Why would we have another terrorist attack? You're saying because of his shift in the national security apparatus to pacifists of Neville Chamberlain who are going to try to make nice with the bubonic plague throwers?
Yes, that was very freaky when you played that speech. But also I think that some of these terrorist nations will catch on that we're going to be caught up in this.
They certainly don't have to worry about being treated too harshly if they should try and fail and get caught.
True.
In fact, they will go probably to a nice prison somewhere in America where they'll get 5 square meals a day, a Quran, and all sorts of counseling. Rather than being waterboarded, they will be cajoled by feminist psychologists into giving up the information.
You really struck it right about this reverend problem, and people think.
Now, how come I'm the only one who heard Reverend Joseph Lowry, which we're going to close with right now on the Savage Nation? Listen to this as we go out the door. Go ahead and play it, guys.
We ask you to help us right for that day when black will not be asked to get back, when brown can stick around, when yellow will be mellow, when the red man can get ahead, man, and when white will embrace what is right, let all those who do.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Prepared to take the oath, Senator?
I am.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, solemnly swear.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear
that I will execute the office of President to the United States faithfully.
That I will execute
the office of President of the United States faithfully. And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Look at them.
Thank you, Obama. Thank you.
They're overwhelmed. They've been like this all afternoon. The enthusiasm is palpable. There's really no stopping the freight train that are Obama supporters here today. Listen, before I toss it back to you, Chris, I have to. You must meet this woman. I don't know where she gets the... You're from New York.
We're from New York.
We thank you, Obama. God bless you.
Well, here's what I've been talking about to you today on this auspicious day, which is that Obama's inauguration was not an auspicious beginning. At least it didn't have one. The flubbed oath of office, the forgettable speech without a single line to remember, the body language problems between Obama and Dianne Feinstein, the collapse of Senator Byrd, the old Ku Klux Klan member, the collapse of Senator Kennedy, the old Chappaquiddick guy. The stock market fell about 300 points and dropped below 8,000. I guess the markets don't have much faith in him. And so I ask conservatives, what are your worst fears about the Obama administration? And liberals, what are your greatest hopes for the Obama administration? The second topic is tied into it, which is Obama's forgettable speech. Was there one line in Obama's speech that will be remembered by history? What was the main difference between Obama's pedestrian speech and the high oratory of FDR and JFK, who they compare him to? Has America in the internet age lost the ability to give great speeches? A face in the crowd. During the inauguration ceremonies, the television cameras scanned through the crowd of assembled dignitaries, senators, and congressmen. What was the most interesting drama you saw play out as they hobnobbed with each other? Anything? It's insane. Only a more savage nation can survive, and here we've turned to the left. Ha! It seems like you can see the coverage of the inauguration on every channel. The talking heads have covered everything from the clothing to what they had for lunch, but it still does not really give us a feeling of what is going on in the city itself. Well, we have a report from Washington, D.C. Here is Jennifer Harper with the Washington Times.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate being on your show. You know, Washington really was a different place this week. We saw this enormous convergence of history and politics and public interest. And for the people who were here, it was certainly an experience. The traffic was unbelievable. The crowd's huge. There was goodwill in the air and certainly an enormous amount of fairly shrill, intense press coverage. And I guess my only concerns during all of this was that the moment, it was almost treated like either New Year's Eve or somebody's really big, fat wedding, that in the midst of all the moment, that we would forget the state of America or the challenges we face, and certainly the challenge that the incoming administration faced. I also worried somewhat that as President Bush leaves office, that he was perhaps not thanked as much as he could have been in the press, acknowledged for the work that he's done over 8 years. I think the amount of time that was spent on his farewell address on the major broadcast networks was 55 seconds. So that's something to think about. Also something to think about during this inauguration, which was essentially billed as kind of a people's moment or a progressive inauguration, the total cost of it was $170 million. And there were 4,000 credentialed journalists, and most telling, a 42,500-member security force. As I traveled the Beltway today in a panic that I wasn't going to get to work, there were indeed police cars at every entrance on our Beltway. to their credit, law enforcement was wonderful today. They have so far have managed to control both crowds and traffic. Certainly for those of us who lived in Washington, this was an extraordinary event. I've been through, I guess, four inaugurations now and a whole lot of marches. And this one was certainly, we were all freezing to death. I was down in the mall last night and was quite amazed at the intensity of the crowd. They were all bundled up. I was all bundled up. And there was a huge police presence. There were a lot of law enforcement folks with serious weapons on. So that's something you certainly get used to in Washington. I expected to see Black Hawk helicopters over the Beltway. That was certainly a fixture right after 9/11. But happily enough, we didn't see any helicopters like that over the Beltway. And certainly the law enforcement and the traffic control was pretty well off the scale. I don't think I've ever seen more security and more control. But what has happened, happily enough, when I at last timidly got into my car to drive on the Beltway to go to work, my gosh, there was no traffic. Essentially, the populace and all of the visitors did what they were supposed to do, which was to ride the metro, and there essentially was no traffic on the Beltway. So there is a contrast that I didn't expect to see this morning on the inauguration of President Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama. Going back to the media coverage for just a moment, part of my job is to gauge how well we did, and certainly it was wall-to-wall coverage. The predictions among some analysts are that the global audience is going to supersede the Super Bowl and possibly Princess Diana's wedding. And I found the fact that a state historic event was really dramatically framed as the moment on CNN, the hour of change on Fox News. And I guess, to their credit, only C-SPAN was managing to present this historic event with live sound without the constant patter of pundits and anchors or all the distraction of all the multiple on-screen graphics that have become so common in our broadcast coverage. And again, I was very concerned that the actual moment, the historic message here of one administration leaving, another one coming in, was going to be lost. And I felt that the moment during the oath of office when President Obama and Chief Justice John Roberts kind of fumbled the words a little bit there, it was also a telling moment that after many months, actually 2 years worth of coverage, Mr. Obama proved to be human after all, and in a sense that was almost an endearing moment to me. And finally, I think There are a lot of mixed emotions across the nation as we confront this event, and certainly around Washington, the crowds were good-natured, they were celebratory. Truly, it was New Year's Eve Part 2, but there were a lot of conflicting emotions amongst Americans, among Washingtonians, and the many visitors that we had to Washington. On the one hand, they were upbeat and happy anticipating a great time, and on the other hand, Gallup and many other polls are revealing that at the heart of the nation, we're still very worried. We're worried about the economy, about terrorism, about the vulnerability of the American way of life. I think that really troubles people. And frankly, I think, too, a lot of the politicos around here, the GOPers, the Republicans, the conservatives, the neocons, and all the other many forms of conservative thought that have erupted around the Beltway. I think folks are using the inauguration kind of as a signal to regroup, to rethink what the heck they're going to be doing in 2012, whether it's Sarah Palin running for president or Michael Savage. How about that? And I guess that's about it for me here in D.C. Back to you, Michael, and thanks for having me.
Thanks for the report, Jennifer. All this inauguration coverage is a little much for me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
They've been like this all afternoon. The enthusiasm is palpable. There's really no stopping the freight train that are Obama supporters here today.
In 1841, a British journalist named Charles Mackay wrote a book called The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. It described the phenomenon of the 1630s in Holland called tulipomania, in what may have been the first recorded event of a speculative bubble. The Dutch began bidding the prices of tulips higher and higher and higher until tulips started to sell for as much as 10 times what the average worker in Holland made. Some people have compared this to the housing bubble and the resulting mortgage crisis in the United States. But the reason I'm talking about it today is for a slightly different reason. Because in this country, we've gone from tulipomania to Obamamania. The same bursting of the speculative bubble may ensue. The left and even many so-called conservatives have invested so much hope in Obama that were he to fail to live up to their expectations, we might not see an economic collapse, but a vast political and mental collapse. Anyone with such ridiculous expectations of a man, especially placed upon them by American liberals, even though he might be a liberal himself, is bound to fail to one extent or another. And yet again and again, he has been trumpeted as the next Messiah. And when those inevitable failures come, the Obama mania bubble will burst. And liberals will be wrecked on the shores of their own delusions. And who will they blame? Probably Nixon. Again, the title of Mackay's book was The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And today, of all days, we are seeing the madness of crowds. In Holland of the 16th century, the madness was over a flower. In Germany of the 1930s, the madness was over a house painter. In the United States of America of 2009, the madness is over. We don't know. At this moment, I'd like to bring on Joseph Farah of WorldNetDaily.com with this week's report. Joseph, thank you for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. This is your WorldNet Daily Report with Joseph Farah, an exclusive presentation of the Savage Nation. The inaugural pig sex orgy that wasn't. Only a blast of last-minute publicity a week before the inauguration killed the plan to hold a pig sex homosexual orgy at a major Washington hotel featuring public bondage and defecation in rooms regularly used for dining services. An outfit known as the Mid-Atlantic Leather Maneuvers had booked 3 second-floor conference rooms at the DoubleTree for 3 days, culminating on Inauguration Day. When the hotel, under public pressure, pulled the plug on the event, organizers treated the decision like a civil rights violation. As many of you know, extreme Christian groups have been pressuring DoubleTree to cancel the Obama Inauguration Pig Sex Orgy, said the announcement. For 2 days, the hotel stood firm while the accusations and falsehoods kept coming in. We have a right to privacy and sexual freedom. Anti-Israel extremists still boast ties to Obama. Even as Barack Obama becomes the 44th president of the United States, anti-Israel professor Rashid Khalidi, whose ties to Obama stirred controversy during the campaign, has stated he could currently communicate with the incoming commander-in-chief, WND, has learned. Amid concern within the pro-Israel Jewish community, Obama repeatedly had denied he was influenced by Khalidi. But in an interview with the Radical Democracy Now! News Network last week, Khalidi expressed hope Obama would alter U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East, talking to all sides of the Israeli-Palestinian issue. He also criticized Israel for killing civilians in the Gaza Strip the past few weeks and for leading what he termed a propaganda campaign to delegitimize the Hamas terrorist organization. Khalidi was asked whether he could speak now to Obama. His answer, I could. He went on to accuse Israel of moving over, in effect, the bodies of women and children during the Jewish state's campaign against Hamas in Gaza. They have carried out one of the most brilliant propaganda campaigns I have ever seen, long before this began, he said. The dehumanization of the Palestinians and the demonization of Hamas laid the groundwork for this. They did what I call clearing the crime scene before the crime by removing all witnesses. Speaking about Obama's foreign policy, Khalidi said, there will be a change in policy. Unrelated lesbian gets child visitation rights. A Christian mother has been told by a Virginia court that her six-year-old daughter must now visit the mother's former lesbian partner in Vermont, and if she refuses, the law will remove the girl by force if necessary. As WND has reported, Lisa Miller left the homosexual lifestyle and became a Christian when her daughter Isabella was 17 months old. But Janet Jenkins, Lisa's same-sex partner when Lisa gave birth to Isabella, is seeking full custody of the girl, claiming she was a parent even though she is not biologically related to Isabella and never sought to adopt her. The case has been further tangled by the courts as Jenkins and Miller were joined in a civil union in Vermont, but Miller and her daughter now live in Virginia, where the law forbids recognition of civil unions. Earlier this month, however, Judge William Sharp of the Shenandoah County Domestic Relations District Court in Virginia ordered Miller to allow Jenkins a three-day unsupervised visit with Isabella. At this point, the Virginia marriage law means nothing, wrote Miller in an email to friends and supporters. Today, the homosexual agenda just marched through our back door. Miller had previously refused to comply with Vermont's orders for visitations, claiming Isabella reported being compelled to bathe naked with Jenkins while visiting and came home speaking of suicide. That is your WorldNet Daily Report with Joseph Farah, an exclusive presentation of The Savage Nation. Back to you, Michael.
Thank you, Joseph, for your report. I'll be right back. It's The Savage Nation. Of the body politic. If you were watching the inauguration ceremonies on TV today, you saw not only the president and the vice president being sworn in and the masses of cheering crowds all blathered over ceaselessly by empty suits and empty skirts in the media. You also saw various dignitaries, members of the Senate and House of Reps milling around both before and after the oath of office. John Kerry, for example, prior to swearing in, looked like a lonely horse standing in a field as he was ignored by those trying to get a better glimpse of Obama. I wish someone would come up to him and give him a feedback. And then there was the strange case of the Queen of Diamonds, Madame Dianne Feinstein. She was there acting as a sort of overblown mistress of ceremonies for the whole event.
It is now the time to present to the President, Mrs. Obama, the Vice President, and Dr. Biden, the beautiful crystal bowls that are over on my left. Now, Lenox China is a great American china factory, china and crystal, and they have made these one-off bowls. And if you have a chance to look at them, they're really quite beautiful. They are in lead crystal. The bases are pure crystal and very, very heavy.
Throughout the proceedings, there was an interesting interplay between her and Barack Obama. You see, as they were walking into the Capitol building, after the speech, Feinstein was edging ever closer to Obama. It reached a point where she was giving him only an inch or two of breathing space, and then a Marine guard suddenly stepped in between them as if to relieve Obama of having to be so close to her. She seemed to be edging as close as she possibly could to the source of power. And then afterwards, once he had bungled the oath of office and given an uninspiring speech, Obama walked away from the podium. And again, Dianne Feinstein tried to get too close to the president. But this time, as you could see if you were watching the television closely, he got sick of her being so close, and he thrust his hip out at her to knock her out of the way. Is the body language we saw play out in this incident a foreshadowing of things to come? What do you think Dianne Feinstein is angling for here? But that wasn't the only bizarre sideshow to this event today. Dick Cheney, who claimed to have pulled a back muscle, was pushed around in a wheelchair for the entire inauguration. It was strange to see him hunching over in an exaggerated way, almost as if to elicit sympathy from potential prosecutors. And then, most strangely of all, when Cheney was wheeled up to his limo after the oath of office, he stood up from his wheelchair and got himself into the car very easily. It was a complete act, as far as I'm concerned, which none of the rest of the media seems to have caught, except yours truly, Michael Savage. The crowd was littered with these little power dramas. Can you imagine the hundreds of congressmen, senators, cabinet members, ex-presidents, each of whom is used to being the center of their own particular universe, each smiling superficially and glancing around furtively as they realize that they are no longer the center of attention? 1,000 crushed egos, 1,000 self-images of the body politic bruised. But moving on. Today we are witnessing what could possibly be the largest turn to the left in America's political history on practically every television station. Now, I put part of the blame on Hollywood. The Hollywood left continues to make movie after movie after movie after movie, making heroes out of the worst dregs of society. They even distort history to make heroes out of Stalinist murderers to push their own leftist ideals. One of the latest cases of this Hollywood revisionist history is the movie Che. Joining us today is Umberto Fontova to give us a report on Hollywood's version of the killer, the sadist, the murderer, the communist revolutionary Che.
Thanks for giving us an opportunity to set the record straight about the Cuban Revolution. Because this movie, just put out by Steven Soderbergh, co-produced by Benicio del Toro, excellent actor, by the way, an excellent director, by the way. But what they have done with this movie, look, it is not often that I find myself in agreement with the New York Times. But even the Castrophilic, one of probably the media's biggest apologists for Castro, even they gagged at this movie. They called it epic hagiography. And that is right. Well, what you've got to keep in mind is that this movie, the script for this movie, was in essence written by Fidel Castro. The producers claim that the movie is very faithful to Che Guevara's diaries. Problem is, Che Guevara's diaries were published by Cuba's propaganda ministry, edited by Fidel Castro, and the foreword to these diaries were actually written by Fidel Castro himself. The producers and the production cast made 7 different visits to Cuba. The primary consultant for the direction of this film was the chief historian of the Cuban Communist Party. Folks, this movie is what makes me realize that I've got to keep reminding myself that the Cold War has been over for 20 years. If in the 50s and the 60s, 70s, 20 years ago, if someone were to make a movie about Nikolai Lenin, let us say, and they were to use the Soviet regime, their propaganda ministry, as their primary source of information, for heaven's sakes, folks, would anyone take this movie seriously? It is faithful to Che's diaries, but it is not faithful to the historical record. It starts out with a lie. For instance, there in Mexico City, when Che first met up with the Castro brothers, they are all talking about the horrible conditions in Cuba, the infant mortality, the poverty, how the mob ran Cuba. These were the things that they were going to rectify, you know. So this, you know, sets the stage for what comes at the moment. Well, even that beginning is a complete lie, because in 1958, Cuba had the 13th lowest infant mortality rate in the world. It had a higher per capita income than half of Europe, and it had net immigration, which is to say people used to be in the 1950s as desperate to enter Cuba as they are now to exit Cuba. So the movie starts out with a lie. Soderbergh read everything, all of his quotes, and he says, well, we tried to be faithful to the record. So the movie contains both sins of omission and sins of commission. For instance, the only thing Che Guevara succeeded in his entire life was in the mass murder of defenseless men and boys.
Exactly.
In everything else, he was an abject failure. People call him a doctor. He was a doctor. No, he was not a doctor. No one has found a copy of his medical degree. He was a medical student dropout. He dropped out of medical school without graduating. So he failed there. But then the movie tries to be faithful to the guerrilla war. That's what Soderbergh says. Well, you know, we're showing him off to the jungle and fighting guerrilla war. Again, there was nothing properly describable as a guerrilla war in Cuba. I mean, you look at this movie, it makes it look like Iwo Jima, when in fact, during these 2 years of so-called guerrilla war in the Cuban countryside that Che Guevara and Fidel Castro were involved in, the best guesstimate they could come up with, and it is that there were a total of 182 casualties on both sides. That is not a guerrilla war. I was born in Cuba, and I'm a Cuban exile, and they said, well, you know, you can't believe those people. They're biased. Well, don't take it from me. Let's go to semi-impartial sources. For instance, there is a book called Guerrillas, A History and Analysis by a fellow named Arthur Campbell. He is considered the foremost authority on guerrilla wars and guerrilla movement, and he wrote this in his book. And Arthur Campbell is a British historian. He has nothing to do with the Cuban exile movement. He says, the Fidelistas were completely lacking in the basic military arts or in any experience of fighting. Sir Hugh Thomas, a famous British historian who was a labor member and in fact sympathized with the Castro rebels, wrote, the Cuban guerrilla war was basically a public relations campaign fought in Washington, D.C. and New York. Fought and won, I might add. The second part of the movie, we go to the guerrilla war in Bolivia, where U.S. CIA advisors and rangers helped track Che Guevara. And there you could probably call a few of the skirmishes that took place in Bolivia semi-guerrilla war. Nothing major. But the end of the movie is the biggest farce. They've got Che shooting down to his last bullet. First of all, he says, guys, I will never abandon you. That's why he tells his guerrillas, I will be at your side until victory. And then they show a massive shootout with Che shooting every one of his last bullets. And then he's got no choice because he has no ammunition left. And he's surrounded and captured. Again, this is utterly bogus. If you look at the records of the Bolivians and the CIA men who actually captured Che Guevara, you will see that he actually snuck away from the firefight. There was a fierce firefight. His men were actually fighting to the last bullet. He snuck away from that and started moving towards the Bolivian soldiers. And then as soon as he saw a couple of them, he threw down his fully loaded weapons and screamed, don't shoot! I'm Che! I'm worth to you more alive than dead. Those were his last words. There are flashbacks to Che Guevara speaking at the United Nations in 1964. And one of the things he says, they've got him saying in this script is, no, we don't allow assassinations in Cuba. Well, this is a sin of commission because he actually said the exact opposite. And the full records of that speech are documented in my book. He actually said, executions, certainly we execute, and we will continue executing as long as it is necessary. This is a war to the death against the revolution's enemies. You could say, okay, it's fiction. but let's try to at least make it interesting. And that is exactly where the movie failed. I have three children, all in their early 20s. They could not sit through the thing. My wife could not sit through the thing. I have friends who could not sit through the thing. Variety magazine earlier called it butt-numbingly boring. So, Michael, thanks a lot for giving us the opportunity to get the truth out there. We have very few outlets for anything like that. And, again, I salute you for giving us this option. Thank you.
Thanks for the report, Umberto. I think I'll pass on this one. I'll be right back. Savage. Any topic is fair game here. Okay, Columbus, Ohio, Fatty. Fatty, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael. How do you define culture, and more specifically, American culture? It seems like it changes. Right. I mean, pretty much every few years or so.
No, it actually doesn't. The people change, but the culture doesn't change. That's the whole... You see, this is the problem that most people are having. They think that multiculturalism should change America. It should not change America. The core values of American culture are set in stone. The people change. The racial makeup changes. But in the old days, they would assimilate to the American culture. Now, what is the American culture? I have defined this. The American culture, when I say borders, you know what that is. When I say language, you know what that means, English only. When I say culture, many of you have been hoodwinked into believing that we're a multicultural nation, which we are not. We are a nation of many races and many cultures. That is true. It has been true from the beginning. But in the past, people would come over and become Americans. Now they come over and they want you to become them. They want you to speak Spanish. They want you to act Muslim. They want you to give up going to the church and going to a mosque. What is the culture? It's very simple. The culture of this nation is built upon several founding documents. One, I'm sure the ACLU will find a problem with. That's called the United States Constitution. That's a founding document. The Bill of Rights, founding document. Bible, that's correct. The Bible, the rules of the Bible. The entire nation was built around the rules of the Bible. Not the rules of the psychos. Not the rules of the perverts. Not the rules of the atheists. Not the rules of the psychos. Not the rules of the perverts. Not the rules of the atheists. But the Christian rules, the Christian Bible built upon the Jewish Bible. So if you want to ask me what the founding documents are, those are the founding documents, and that's the culture of America. Now, did I say that Buddhism shouldn't be practiced? No. Did I say Hinduism shouldn't or couldn't be practiced? No. Did I say that Islam shouldn't or couldn't be practiced? No. But in the past, the other religions were practiced, but they did not try to dominate the nation, which is fundamentally a Christian nation. It is not a Buddhist nation. It is not a Hindu nation. It is not a Muslim nation. This is primarily, has always been and always will be, primarily a Christian nation. The rest of the people certainly are welcome to practice their religions, but they're not welcome to deny Christianity its place in the family of man. Now, I've given you a long, long story on this, but there are other documents that go back to the Magna Carta. But that would require an education beyond the sixth grade, so I'll stop using large words. I don't mind. It doesn't matter. That's the name of the game. That's the business. That's why the Savage Nation is a good show, because I understand it doesn't sound like any other show. For example, when I get off the air, you know, it takes me at least an hour to an hour and a half to descend from the high wire, the adrenaline, the intensity. It really does. Last night I couldn't sleep at all because it was raining. I couldn't bicycle. And the adrenaline builds up terribly. The worst thing you could do is go to dinner. I went to dinner. The second worst thing you could do is have two drinks. I had two beers. The third worst thing you could do is come right home and watch television. I came right home and watched television. I didn't sleep a minute last night, one nightmare after another. Theoretically, when I get off the air, I should go run. I should walk. I should bicycle. I should do a treadmill. Who can do that after a show? I'll do the same thing again tonight. I'll go right to a Chinese restaurant, have two beers, and come home and watch television, and then I won't sleep again. But it makes for good radio, I got to tell you that. The truth is it makes for very it makes for great radio. Oh, what I was getting at is, so on the way to the restaurant last night after the show, I turn on talk radio and I listen. And every show is like more or less the same thing. Republicans this, Democrats that, you know, this business is a changing business. The sands are shifting underneath our feet. And whether or not talk radio survives is a matter of the talent level. I got to tell you that right now. And that's it. Oh, but moving on. Well, here's what's on michaelsavage.com today. First of all, we have today's monologues up on Tulipomania and the body language of the body politic. We have the notes of the Savage Nation, the flubbed oath, the forgettable speech, the collapse of Senator Byrd, the collapse of Senator Kennedy, the stock market falling about 300 points and dropping below 8,000. There's another couple of stories that are worth talking about. One is from a day ago. Al-Qaeda cell, that means a group of men, terrorists, were killed by the Black Death or the plague. Today it's come out that they were developing biological weapons when they were infected. In other words, it's not from rats running around in a cave. The group of 40 terrorists were reported to have been killed by the plague at a training camp in Algeria earlier this month. It was first thought that they could have caught the disease through fleas on rats because of the poor living conditions in their forest hideout. But there are now claims that this Al-Qaeda cell was developing the disease, called a plague, as a weapon to use against Western cities. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, do you have any idea the kind of enemy we're facing, what kind of demonic psychotics these throwbacks are? Experts said that the group was developing chemical and biological weapons. That should be very chilling for those of you who think that this ideological chasm between the East and the West, that is radical Islam and freedom, is something that can be bridged by a lot of hot air. These people are intent on killing us, and unless we kill them first, they will kill us first. No pardon for Libby. That, of course, is shocking. President Bush has decided not to pardon Vice President Dick Cheney's former chief of staff. Bush, as you well know, is not very loyal to anyone around him, and that's sad. He also did not pardon Randy Duke Cunningham, Vietnam War ace extraordinaire. He's rotting in a prison. Kennedy suffers seizure at an inaugural speech. There's nothing we can say about that. Senator Byrd left early of his own accord. He was sick. There are many stories that we have talked about today on the Savage Nation. I like to point down to the bottom of the page on michaelsavage.com. Presidential Limousine Museum. Interesting pictures of the limos from FDR forward. They're beautiful pictures. I suggest you read them. This has been the Savage Nation's review of the website, michaelsavage.com. I'm Michael Savage. The Savage Nation will return.
Savage.